Hey, hope you're enjoying the Grave Talks. Each and every week, we're now giving you two brand new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Today and every Wednesday, we're going to flash back to some of our favorite interviews of the past. To listen to our complete archive of episodes, along with commercial-free advanced episodes of the show, months before they're released to the public, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. It's only $5. You sign up now at patreon.com/thegravetalks or follow the links at thegravetalks.com. Today on The Grave Talks, a haunting in Washington. In 2010, June Matthews moved into her perfect home just north of Spokane, Washington, with her husband. At first, the house seemed like everything she ever wanted. Only a few odd notes that could clearly be fixed. Ignoring the strange feeling that she got in the basement and not being believers in the paranormal, the couple purchased the home and began their new life behind its walls. Was this the start of a haunting in Washington? Things started going very wrong. Unexplained noises in the nights, doors and drawers opening on their own, and eventually voices of the dead haunting them as they tried to sleep. They both very quickly became believers in the paranormal and accepted the fact that they lived in a very haunted house. But it all had to start somewhere.
When my husband and I first saw the house, we thought it was beautiful. It was everything that we had wished for. And it, amazingly, never really got a creepy feeling, except that when we both had gone downstairs, later we found out that we both felt that the downstairs area was really creepy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but other than that, I mean, we didn't really communicate about it. And other than that, it was perfect. It was beautiful.
Other than it being creepy, I mean, expound upon that a little bit more for me. Was it just kind of the creepy feeling of, oh, this is a new building I've never been in? It's a basement. Sometimes basements kind of have that feeling. Or was there more to it than just the average, this is a dark room type situation?
It's a half-open basement. Mm-hmm. So that when you go downstairs, there's a front door and windows. And then, so the whole front is open, and the other side is partly underground. And the easiest, best way to explain it, it was like walking into a tomb. It was cold. It even though it had carpet and, you know, it was freezing cold, and it just felt like a cement tomb. Mm-hmm. It gave you the chills. When you walk downstairs, sometimes to this day, the hair on the back of your neck will stand up.
So you have this feeling in this basement, but the rest of the house is feeling pretty good to you.
Yeah, there was a couple things, like my closet upstairs is where the attic entrance is, and I was in the closets. They're like little walk-in closets, and I was in there looking around, and this like really cold, it was like cold air, but I would have to say it'd be more like if a cold hand slapped you very lightly on the face. Mm-hmm. And I figured maybe there was a draft coming from someplace, but there never was. So
you know, you had these feelings. Were these feelings things that you experienced prior to purchasing the home, just when you're going through it, or were these things you started to really kind of notice once you were starting to get settled there?
Well, I never, ever believed in the paranormal at all.
Okay.
So I wouldn't have even gone there. I wouldn't have You know, I thought the cold air in the closet was something we would have to repair. And I thought downstairs, we're going to put some paint and we're going to decorate it and get rid of the ugly carpet. And it's going to be beautiful. And then it won't feel so creepy.
So there was nothing and, there that was making you think, oh, there's something paranormal going on. Everything had a rational explanation and an easy fix of some sort.
Yeah, the only room that we thought was unexplainable, but I didn't think we weren't going to the paranormal at all. But one of the rooms, I don't even know what it is. It's there's no window. It's four walls and a door. And it had a hospital TV stand on the wall. You know, like one of those old-fashioned hospital TV stands. Mm-hmm. And then on the opposite side where you might be putting a bed, there were these boards on the wall, cemented and bolted to the wall. But the previous owner didn't just bolt these things. He actually cemented them. We can't get them off without replacing the wall.
Wow.
And I don't even understand what the hell that would be for.
Yeah, I mean, some very odd things. But if you're liking the rest of the house and you don't believe in paranormal at this point in time, you're just thinking, well, it's stuff we can get rid of or fix or take care of, you know, over time. It's not anything malevolent or ominous. Okay. And that's, I think, a very important thing in your story is understanding what the mindset is at any given point in the story. And at the beginning, even though many others may hear this part in the start and go, oh, my God, you know, I'm feeling this way, that way. Why would you go into this house? Because it's there's an explanation for everything in your mind at that point that is very fixable.
Yeah.
So you get into the house, you start unpacking, you start beginning to make this house a home. How does that go?
My husband had taken a job. That's why we moved here. So within the first 3 days, he had to take his first trip. And so he'd be spending, a week away from home. And so here I am. It's 3 days after we moved to a new state in a rural town. Can't see a human being, a car, a house. I'm all by myself except for my animals. And he's left on his trip. And I'm trying to, you know, not be nervous. And our movers were going to be another week before they got here with our stuff, but we had brought some stuff ourselves. So I was unpacking boxes and we brought, you know, just a few dishes and things to get us by. And I'm washing them off. And I heard my husband come back in the front door. I heard his keys. I heard him walking down the hall. I had soap all over my hands, and so I'm rinsing off the soap, trying to find a towel. I whip around to give him a hug, and as I'm turning, I said, you know, oh, my God, you can't stay away from me, can you? And there's nobody there. But I was so shocked because, I mean, I heard him. I heard his keys. I heard the door. I heard him walking. And then I just knew he was behind me.
Mm-hmm.
You know how you just know somebody's standing right behind you.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell you how shocked I was when I turned around and he wasn't there. And then I checked all of the upstairs, checked the front door. It was locked. I was looking around. I couldn't understand. I went back to the sink, turned the water on to see if the water hitting the dishes would sound like keys, and I was trying to explain it and understand what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And further into that day, anyway, my husband had never come back. And further into that day, I heard knocking. First, a knock on the door, and it was like 1, 2, 3, like a human would knock.
Sure.
We have a lot of animals here, and we have woodpeckers and all kinds of things. But this was like a human knock, and so so I'm not just going to go open the front door. But I, you know, looked through the windows. There wasn't anybody there. I eventually did open the door. There wasn't anybody there. And then I thought, you know, it's, I don't know, the house is settling. But then about 5 minutes after that, there was a knock at the bathroom window. And that really scared me. Because I thought, if this is a human being and they think it's okay to walk around my house and start knocking on the windows, you know, I could be in trouble. This is weird. But I get to the bathroom, and meanwhile, I have these dogs and cats, but the dogs are barking, reacting to the knocking. And so I'm believing this whole time this is a human being, and get to the bathroom, there's nothing. I'm in the bathroom, I hear knocking at the kitchen, and I mean, I must have just looked like a crazy person going back and forth from room to room trying to locate who's knocking on my house.
Sure.
And there's never anybody there.
So at the end of this episode of trying to determine who is knocking on your window, what conclusion do you come to, or do you even come to one?
We are gun collectors. So I got those ready.
Okay.
Had quite a few guns out. And I didn't really know what to expect. I never thought of something. It's still, to me, the idea of it being some kind of paranormal entity. I just, that was ridiculous to me.
Sure.
So, and also to me, much more frightening would be the idea that this is a human being who is trying to see if maybe there was even somebody in here. When we came the very first day that we came here, it was 31 days after the first time we saw the house. And when we first saw it, it was really clean and pretty. And the minute we walked in, this place was unbelievably filthy with fingerprints and this brown goo that was everywhere. And mud was every place, and we thought maybe the house had been vacant for a long time, so maybe people were coming in here and partying, and that's what I thought. Maybe there's somebody who hangs out at the house, and they're trying to see if anybody's in here.
Sure.
And that's all. And to me, that was really terrifying.
I mean, that would be extremely bizarre. I mean, when you looked at the home, I'm assuming it did not. It was in much more of a presentable state. And then
it was beautiful
to get there, and then to have all of that there. I mean, when you did that, I mean, I'm assuming you had worked with a real estate agent. Did you contact the agent to say what's going on? What happened to this house between us seeing it and us moving in?
Much like a Lifetime movie, as crazy as it sounds, our real estate agent passed away.
Oh, my God.
This was the last house she ever showed, and she passed away. We couldn't believe it. I mean, I planned to have coffee with her. You know, she felt bad for me because I didn't know anybody here, and I'd be spending a lot of time alone in this house.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out that she'd been flown back to California or flown to California because she was so ill, and her son was a doctor in California. So they flew her to California and she died. So by day three, I believe, she had already passed away. Prior to that, we weren't allowed to talk to the previous owners. There was all these rules that, you know, I had a lot of questions.
Sure.
So I was trying to contact our real estate company and have somebody go to their realtor and ask her, like, where's the manual for the water heater and the oven and, you know, how do you run any of this stuff? And we never got any of our questions answered, but...
So you never were able to contact the previous owner to say... Just no. Basic things of house functioning, not to mention all the strange things that began to happen.
Right.
And they were pretty adamant of no contact from point one.
They literally told us we couldn't have contact with them.
Wow. I mean,
I thought that was really strange.
It
and
is.
They did tell us that they'd moved to Oregon. And, you know, later on, I Googled them because I started thinking maybe something's going on with these folks.
Sure.
And they live in town.
In the city you live in?
Well, no. I live just north of
sure.
Spokane.
Okay.
They live in Spokane.
Okay,
they never moved to Oregon.
So they're very close, and wow. I obviously, you know, you have the agreement of you can't contact them, but that in itself, have you ever attempted to reach out to them to say, hey,
no.
By the way?
No. No. No, I haven't.
So you get into the house, and it is filthy, and your options are pretty much clean or be angry and you know, you're wanting to be happy in your house and get it up to, you know, to a livable standard. I'm assuming you begin cleaning. How does that go?
Oh, the downstairs bathtub had so much mud and red hair, and coincidentally there is a neighbor that I have nicknamed Buffalo Bill because he sounds like the serial killer.
Okay.
Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs. He has that accent. Mm-hmm. And I've never met him. I've actually never even seen him because you can't see people. We're in the forest. But these are our closest neighbors. And other people have seen him, and he has red hair. And when we first moved in, of course, we didn't have this information. But the Buffalo Bill neighbor has red hair. And our tub downstairs was full of mud and red hair.
Mm-hmm.
And it took my husband 3 days just to clean the bathtub. So I was kind of left with everything else. But when we first walked in here, the smell was just unbelievable. And it smelled like so many chemicals. It smelled like burning chemicals. And that's kind of where we went with, you know, maybe it's some kind of drugs.
Yeah.
But there was this thick, sticky film on every wall, every cabinet, every light switch. It kind of a brownish. It didn't smell or anything, but it was disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And where there wasn't this film, there were fingerprints everywhere, and I saw none of this.
Yeah.
31 days prior, this place looked completely different. And now, I mean, it was staged and everything. And, you know, I know it's going to look different because they moved out all the staging furniture. But now it was filthy. It seemed much darker. It just seemed different, like an abandoned. It went from a nice, bright, shiny house to like some dark, abandoned haunted house. That's what it reminded us of.
Yeah.
In kind of a joking manner, we even said that. This is like a haunted house. It's ridiculous. There were cobwebs that didn't even make sense to me. Like, where the hell? There's a wall where they didn't just paint. They put kind of a terracotta stone. I don't know what it is. They smeared something on the walls to give it texture.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed the wall when we saw it 31 days before. And the day we moved in here, there was cobwebs hanging from the textured wall. That with all the sunlight that was coming in here, there's no way I wouldn't have seen it. And
sure.
I don't know how something gets this dirty that fast.
It, obviously, you know, that very... very bizarre, but I can see where you may still be thinking at that point, there's a logical explanation. Let's just get this thing, you know, cleaned up. So once you finally do kind of get things cleaned up, how does life continue to progress at the property?
Well, the movers came, took about a week, and we had literally to the number 100 boxes, and I had them put them all downstairs. And prior to the movers coming, I had a blow-up mattress, a television set, a toolbox, and some plates and clothes and things, and one table. And, you know, that was it until they came. So the furniture they'd set up upstairs, but all the boxes to keep, you know, things neater, I just had them put everything downstairs.
Sure.
And I had already heard noises downstairs, but I did start to hear more noises, and my animals would react to the sounds, and it sounded like people. It sounded like people were in the house, and definitely one person, and I would load my gun, and God, for the first, I don't think there was a night for the first 6 months that I didn't have to get my loaded gun and go looking for the intruder.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up putting alarms on all the windows and doors. And so if you open it, it has to go off and make a sound. But before the alarms, I thought, you know, somehow they're breaking in here and maybe it's a squatter. And with 100 boxes downstairs, he had a ton of places to hide. And it was just terrifying. Things would be missing. I'd wake up, I'd go in the kitchen, and drawers would be open that didn't make sense because there was no utensils to put in it yet. They were in boxes downstairs. And I mean, some of the sounds sounded like somebody was moving furniture.
Yeah.
Sometimes it would sound like somebody took a book and dropped it on the stone floor downstairs, or breaking glass. And I'd go and I'd look, search the house for the sound, because a lot of times I thought, well, maybe a box fell over. We did have two cats downstairs. But every time I go down there, the cats were in the weird room. This one weird room we had with no windows and the boards bolted to the wall, and they'd be hiding in there inside a bolt of rolled up carpet. And there was never any sign of a problem. There was never broken glass. I could never find the box that I thought fell over. There was never anything.
You're just hearing these things, but there's no evidence to be discovered. So what do you think? I mean, you're in there a little bit of time. You obviously had the very strange, you know, episode of moving in with the filthiness of the home. You're starting to hear things. You're not finding the logical evidence that should be there of what you're hearing. What's your reasoning at this point? What's going through your mind?
My daughter was planning on moving here. And so I talked to her every day, and I talked to my son every day, and a friend of mine who ended up coming out here to try to help me figure it out. Of course, all three of them felt like the house was haunted immediately. They were just, oh, your house is haunted. And I'm like, oh, come on. You know, that's just silly. But after a while, I couldn't come up with anything else to, mm-hmm. you know, I couldn't, it's either two things. There's somebody in the house or the house is haunted. Or my third one was maybe the house is falling down.
Okay. a structural problem of some sort.
Yeah, but I always looked for cracks and things you would see if there was something wrong with the foundation or the house was shifting, and there's never any cracks.
I mean, that
couldn't explain it.
So you're still, you know, kind of reasoning things out here. Was there any other moments as time progressed here that really just made you go, okay, no? Like, what was there that moment where you said, this is haunted? There's, without a doubt, It's not the house shifting. It's not a squatter. It's not this or that. This is a haunting. Was there that moment that kind of switched over?
You know, I was so judgmental about stuff like this. I was such a closed-minded person when it came to something like this, that even when I would start to say, oh my God, it has to be haunted, for months it still seemed, I would talk myself out of it. So one day I'd start to believe it. The next day I'd talk myself out of it. But it was actually guests to our home, people that would come to our house, and my daughter and a friend of mine and her husband. Her husband's a retired head of the sheriff's department. And when they started having, they had experiences within the first hour they were here. And that was a huge relief, because I was actually, the last option was I was just losing my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started thinking I'm losing it, I started trying to videotape and record things. Because I wanted some kind of, Jim, my husband wasn't home that often, especially then, but when he was home, very few things happened, and they were kind of easily brushed aside. And so he wasn't having the same exact kind of experience that I was, because he wasn't here long enough. And so I wanted to record it to be able to show him, but I didn't show him anything until much later. But once people were here and had their own experiences, a lot of these people even wrote their own testimonials in the back of my book so they could put it in their own words. Their experiences were just as bizarre as mine were.
So what happened with your guests that came that was kind of that tipping point for you where it was like, okay, I'm not alone here. Things are going down for everybody.
My friend came first. And her husband came and they were in the guest room. But they weren't even here an hour when we were. I was taking him downstairs to show him the room. My husband was still on his trip, and I took him downstairs to show them their bedroom, and we could hear the upstairs, somebody threw their house keys, or it sounded like somebody threw house keys on the table. And so Sandy, my friend, said, oh, Jim's home. And I said, no, Jim's not home. She said, yeah, he is. I just heard him throw his keys on the table. And I said, no, he's not home, because he knows I've got a gun all the time, so he will call me. He would never just walk into the house.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, there's no way it's him. It's not him. And I said, see, I'm not crazy. It's just the house. And we went back upstairs and we checked. And they had both heard this very clearly. And so much that she even yelled up, hi, Jim. There was no one here. There was no keys. There was nothing. So that was their first experience. And then she had the idea to set up a tape recorder and ask some questions. And so with my book, there's also a DVD. So as you're reading about the events, you can stop reading, go get the DVD, and turn it on. And the DVD is chapterized so you can hear and see everything you just read.
Mm-hmm.
And in that first recording, we started recording people talking. And crazy sounds that we could hear in the room without the recorder. You know, we could just hear things going on. And So we'd hear something and she'd say, "Are you here now?" And we would hear a noise that kind of sounded more like a bang. But when you played it back, it was some guy would say yes. Or in a lower voice, somebody would say, "Yes, I'm here." Mm-hmm. And that was it for me. That was it. There's no way I'm recording people talking.
Sure.
I mean, for half a second, I thought, maybe we're recording picking up something through a vent or something that's... They're answering our questions. You know, are you here with us?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Are you male? Yes. Are you a child? Yes. You know, the only things that they didn't answer was their name. When we'd ask, "Can you tell us your name?" A lot of times, I don't know if that was an answer, but a lot of times it almost sounded like they weren't speaking English. And so I couldn't understand what it was.
Are you aware at all of the history of the house or the property or what has gone on there? I know you didn't have a chance or have an ability to speak with the previous owner, but just through like historical records of any sort of, you know, when it was built, what had been there or what is there or was there?
I know some things that are a fact. We had brothels, wood mills. I know that we live up on a hill, and a big hill. Below the hill, there's a little one-lane street, and then there's just a flat valley, and then a Mount Spokane is way on the other side. And I know from pictures that I've not seen a picture of the brothel, but I saw pictures of the wood mill. And they used the Little Spokane River, which is in the valley, to transport the logs and stuff. So in trying to find any historic information about this place, this town is unincorporated. So back in, I think it was 1877, when these things were here and this town was first established, being unincorporated, there was no law here. There was no, there was nobody in charge.
Mm-hmm.
So I have tried every resource I could think of to find exact information about this area, and you can find nothing. It's like what happens here just goes away. Since 1877, there's only three things ever documented that have ever happened, and they're all current, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
in between the 80s and 2000. But three things since 1877. That's not possible.
It's like a good place to go and disappear. That wraps up part one of our interview with June Matthews. In part two, we'll talk more about her haunted home and what is the historical history of the property where this house sits. What strange objects were found stacked in a pyramid form on her living room floor? What caused a large antique record player to move on its own to a new location? Also, what kind of evidence did June find when she accepted her home as haunted and began to investigate it? And why does June continue to call this very haunted house home? All that and more in part two. To hear it, become a gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. That's how we keep this show on the air. Without the support, this show simply would not exist. To hear part two, go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. Become a gravekeeper and help keep us on the air. Only $5 a month gets you access to all of our shows months before they're released to the public and all of the part twos as well. Patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.